Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. This may sound familiar. You haven't been sleeping well all week, and mid-afternoon hits, you think about that big frosted brownie or maybe a coffee drink loaded with flavoring milk and some whipped cream on top. Wow. You may not connect the two, but two UW-Madison researchers have done a little bit of work in that area, and so we're going to talk with them about it. And just talking about why we eat what we eat, why do we overeat, what are some of the ways maybe we can kind of overcome some of the eating problems. Certainly we have a weight issue in Wisconsin, and I'm raising my hand too. I have a problem sometimes with eating too, but I've actually been working on it and am losing some weight. And now that my knee is a little better, I'm able to get some exercise, and it's having some impact. Anyway, two guests for you today. Dr. Ruth Benka directs the Wisconsin Sleep Laboratory and Clinic. She's also a professor in the departments of psychology and psychiatry at UW-Madison, past president of the Sleep Research Society and the Associated Professional Sleep Societies. And Dr. Benka, great to have you back again.
Thank you. Yeah. Happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. And Dr. Brian Baldo is an associate professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He specializes in the neural basis of eating disorders and addiction. And Dr. Baldo, thank you for spending time with us today.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
I'm going to move some microphones. There we go. Let's get that one over there. Yeah, that's good. That'll work. That'll work very well.
Great.
And pull this one over here. Okay. So, why do we overeat? I mean, there's a lot of people in this state and in this country who overeat. Why do we do it?
Well, that's a great question. It turns out that we eat for many different reasons. Obviously, we need to eat to survive. We need the energy from food. We need the calories. But that's not the only reason we eat. And anyone that's had a full, nutritionally complete meal and then afterwards had a big piece of chocolate cake knows that there's another side to it. We also eat sometimes because we find eating to be very pleasurable. We find the food to be rewarding. And my own research focuses on the multiple systems in the brain that control feeding, but I'm particularly interested in why we go after that chocolate cake.
Yeah. Well, so what system really does tell us what to eat?
Well, there are two systems that are important for the rewarding aspect. One of them, you may have heard of, the dopamine system, is very important for getting us to goals that we find pleasant to interact with, tasty food being one of them. The other system that I'm particularly interested in, they're called opiates or opioid peptides. These are small protein-like molecules in the brain that act at the same brain receptors as do drugs like morphine and heroin. And over the years, it's become apparent that these brain chemicals greatly magnify or enhance the rewarding aspects of eating yummy foods like tasty snacks, salty chips, sweet-tasting high-fat foods, and so on.
You know, I was talking with somebody the other day about eating and exercising and what it takes to lose weight, and I sometimes think the perspective, we were talking about an M&M.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably have heard this, but what it takes, how long you have to walk, how far you have to walk to eliminate the calories from one M&M.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out, supposedly, that it's a football field and the end zone, 120 yards. So every time you eat an M&M, you need to walk a football field and beyond to get rid of it.
It's remarkable. Yeah. And, you know, and it turns out that might not be by accident. We find ourselves drawn to these foods that are very calorie dense. And often they're foods that have high concentrations of sugar and fat. And if you think from an evolutionary perspective, way back in our evolutionary history, when food was scarce and hard to get, it was probably advantageous that we were drawn to foods that were very energy dense. And if we found them very rewarding, that would be a very efficient way to get us to eat more and more to help us survive in case we couldn't find it the next time around. In today's world, though, things are very different. It's very easy to access highly tasty, palatable, energy-dense foods, and you know we don't do ourselves a favor by packing them full of all kinds of sweeteners, high fructose corn syrup, and so on.
Yeah. And I think M&Ms are designed to make you can't eat just one M&M.
No, I don't. I wish I can.
I couldn't. I'm pretty sure of that. Although it now makes me stop and think a little bit when I see one of those cookies with five or six M&Ms on the top. Well, Dr. Benka, there's some research on sleep and how it makes... A lack of sleep may cause us to crave fatty foods?
Right. So, as Brian was saying, one of the main issues these days is, we have a brain that's geared to help us find high-rewarding foods, and we live in a society where we are just surrounded by more than we could possibly eat if we didn't sleep at all. And one of the things that has been interesting to me is that I study the effects of insufficient sleep, amongst other things, and that it's been observed by many scientists over the years and probably by all of us as individuals, is that one of the first things that happens when you get sleep deprived is you start eating more. And you don't just eat more healthy food. You start going after the junk food, the ice cream, the cookies, the candy. Late at night, we're all looking for something, sweet when we know we've already had enough to eat.
So you're studying about why we do that?
Well, actually, Brian and I together did that.
Yeah.
So for many years, I've, been aware, and we've noticed that, both people and animals will start preferring the wrong kinds of food, or these high-calorie, high-rich foods when they're sleep-deprived. And one of the concerns from a sort of epidemiological or societal level is that over the last 50 years or so, our society has been becoming increasingly sleep deprived. We now sleep at least 20% less than we used to about 50 years ago. And at the same time that we are more sleep deprived as a society, we are becoming more obese. And so one of the questions is, is there a connection here? And so a number of scientists have done studies with humans restricting their sleep and then looking to see what happens to their patterns of food intake and their weight gain. And there have been some really nice controlled studies done just in normal healthy people showing that if you restrict how many hours they're allowed to sleep at night, cut them down to maybe 5 hours instead of the normal 8 hours, and that's probably not too dissimilar from what a lot of people do normally, they will preferentially go after high-calorie, high-reward foods, the kinds of things Brian was talking about, those energy-dense foods. They'll particularly do it at night before bedtime. And we also, when you're the most sleep-deprived, and they'll start putting weight on. We also know that if you're on a diet and you're not sleeping, even if you cut your calories, that it seems that you lose the wrong kind of weight. So if you want to lose that extra fat that you're carrying around, if you don't sleep as much, you might lose the 5 pounds, but it might be some lean body tissue as well as the tissue that you don't want to lose. And finally, there are also aspects of the timing of when you eat. If you eat more late at night, which is when you're sleep deprived and you want to eat all those calorie-rich foods, it is more likely to put weight on you. Again, if you think evolutionarily, if you're in a setting where food might not be available and you're starting to get sleep deprived because you're looking for food, you want to go after that high calorie food. And if you're more efficient at packing on the pounds from it, you're going to survive a bit better.
Mm. You may want to join in with our conversation as we listen to Dr. Ruth Benka and Dr. Brian Baldo. talking about kind of a really interesting topic about how we eat, why we eat what we eat, and how sleep or the lack of sleep may affect what we eat. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page as well. At the Larry Mehler Show, you can post a question or a comment there, or maybe your own experience. Do you eat a lot when you at night when you're just before you go to bed, or do you eat a lot, or do you go after those comfort, what we sometimes call comfort foods that are really could pack the pounds on? I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments. And lots of people are doing that right now as we speak. So the dopamine, I'm sorry, you're going to add.
Well, yeah, we're going to just say, I mean, one of so the interesting thing that we find is, so we know that sleep deprived people want to eat more, and they want to eat the wrong kinds of things, and they put on more weight. And we were trying to figure out why this happened. And I'm going to turn back to Brian because he's going to explain.
Well, you know what? We'll make that a tease.
Okay.
We'll make that a tease because we are going to have, you won't have enough time to explain that. And we need to take a short break to take a look at the news and the weather and to find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll come back and talk with Dr. Ruth Benka, director of the Wisconsin Sleep Laboratory and Clinic. Also a professor in the Department of Psychology and Psychiatry at UW-Madison. Dr. Brian Baldo is an assistant professor in the Department of Psychiatry at the UW-Madison, specializes in the neural basis of eating disorders and addiction. And they're our guests right up until 12:30 today. We'll take a look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we will be back with our guests. Stay with us. We'll be right back. So happy to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mehler here, taking a look at some interesting research today and some interesting work by a couple of docs relating to how our brain directs junk food binges. And it's part of a bigger picture of why are so many of us overweight here in this state and across the country? Why do we overeat? Those are some of the issues we're taking up today with Dr. Ruth Benka, who directs the Wisconsin Sleep Laboratory and Clinic. Dr. Brian Baldo, also with us, is an assistant professor in the Department of Psychiatry and at the UW-Madison. He specializes in the neural bases of eating disorders and addiction. Dr. Benka, thank you, by the way, for coming by. I really appreciate it.
Our pleasure.
And Dr. Baldo, thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Well, we have callers online with questions or comments, but and we'll get to those in a minute. The number to call is 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org with a question or comment. And you can go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mehler Show. You can post a question or a comment there. So we were talking about the fact that if we are tired, we tend to eat more fatty foods and put on more weight if we don't get enough sleep. And frankly, I think Dr. Benka is right. Many of us do not sleep 8 hours anymore. I think I sleep six. And that's about all I can sleep. No matter what I do, it seems. Maybe you're in that situation too. But why is it that we eat more whenever we are sleep deprived, Dr. Baldo?
Well, yeah, it's interesting because we eat more, and it seems that when in sleep loss, the types of foods that we're attracted to are these rewarding calorie-dense foods. So it made us wonder, could it be that the special brain systems that seem to be particularly important for directing the intake of these rewarding foods are those the ones that are changed also in sleep loss? And given my interest in the opioid peptide systems, that seemed like a good place to start. When we looked, we found that in rats that were sleep restricted, there was a massive upregulation, a massive increase in the gene expression in these reward modulatory opioid peptide systems. Again, these are protein-like molecules that act at the same brain receptors on which drugs like morphine and heroin act. And it seems like these systems evolve to direct us towards over-consuming highly energy-dense palatable foods. When we looked, the gene expression of these systems was off the charts. It was dramatically increased, particularly in the brain regions that are known to be important for modulating the rewarding impact of food.
So if you get more sleep, if you get enough sleep, you're going to be less likely to put on those pounds?
Yeah, it seems like if you don't get enough, the system starts becoming overactive. And that's what might be directing us towards overeating or binging on these unhealthy, calorie-dense foods.
Yeah. Dr. Benka, how'd you guys happen to get together to work on this, by the way?
Well, it's kind of an interesting kind of a fortuitous story, which is that I've been studying sleep deprivation for a long time. And again, just from my own sleep deprivation experiences and mm-hmm. knowing what I start eating late at night when I'm not sleeping, and also observing animals who are sleep deprived, that this, and reading about it, we know that this is one of the most immediate effects of sleep loss, is that it really drives one to eat more. And I always was wondering, why does that happen? And it just so happens that Dr. Baldo and one of his former colleagues were some of the experts on understanding why we eat, what the mm-hmm. brain systems are doing, of these various different brain systems, and particularly the systems that modulate the intake of the exact things that sleep-deprived people will try to eat. So I mm-hmm. said, why don't we look at this and see if we can figure this out? And sure enough, we found that basically the food-liking switch gets sort of stuck in the on position, and no matter how much you eat, you still are going to
mm-hmm. try to eat more.
Try to eat more, even though you've way overshot your calorie needs for the day.
Mark in Johnson Creek has a question. Mark, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. See, and I don't know which panelist can maybe answer this, but have you been able to find a link between, say, sleep apnea, and I'm thinking of the different causes for lack of sleep, and in particular, like sleep apnea and a binging disorder like that?
Well, I'll start with that. So one of the things that happens in sleep apnea, particularly untreated sleep apnea, where people stop breathing many times an hour, is that the sleep becomes very fragmented. And it's basically being sleep deprived. We know that many people with sleep apnea are essentially sleep deprived. And certainly in my clinical experience, us people with sleep apnea often report, because we ask a lot of sort of standardized questions in our clinic, that they feel compulsively driven to overeat. There's some evidence clinically that when people start sleeping better, feeling better, it's easier for them to stick to their diets than when they're exhausted. And certainly from a clinical standpoint, patients often complain to me, like, I know I need to lose weight, but I'm just so tired all the time. And it's just really hard to find the motivation to do that. Another thing is that sleep apnea drives the body into more of an inflammatory state, and it impairs glucose regulation. So it does a lot of things that are going to affect your metabolism, not in a good way. I don't know, Brian, if you want to add anything to that.
Sure. Based on what we found, one might also predict that if someone is experiencing fragmented sleep, you would get an upregulation again in these brain systems that direct you towards the calorie-dense foods. What's interesting is that years ago there was a classic study in which they tried to understand what these opioid systems do. And what they did was they took people and gave them a sort of a buffet of various types of snack foods that are tasty. You know, sweet, tasty things like chocolate or ice cream, salty things like chips. And everybody sort of, each person came up with their own rank order of what were their favorites. And then what they did was give them a drug that blocks the actions of these opioid peptides in the brain. And what people reported was that, well, a chip still tasted like a chip and chocolate still tasted like chocolate, but they just didn't quite like it as much. And we think that that's what may be happening. What our work suggests is that when sleep is fragmented, these systems, these opioid systems become, in these brain reward centers, become massively overactive. And that's what causes the preferential cravings for these unhealthy foods.
Yeah. And again, it's not that that's the only reason we overeat. It's just sort of an added, you know, last straw that breaks the camel's back, you know, on top of everything else. It's just, you know, one more thing to
start. So if I may follow up just real quickly.
Sure.
Then have you found a direct correlation at all that if you treat sleep apnea, that it can definitely help in weight loss in general?
It certainly can't hurt. And I think there have been some studies looking at that. It's not always as dramatic an effect as we would like to see, that, you know, you magically treat sleep apnea and you're going to suddenly lose all those pounds. But it certainly is going to make it less difficult. I think where there are more studies is, or at least directly showing effects of some sleep disorders on eating, are in people with narcolepsy, which is a disorder of excessive sleepiness and sleep fragmentation as well. There is an increased risk of various types of eating disorders and binge eating in those patients who are sleepy and tired. Hmm. So, again, the data that we have that suggests more that sleep is going to help you lose weight is more from experimental studies done in humans, as opposed to the clinical studies. I think we're sort of poised now to start to look at some of these studies and apply them in clinical settings. We do know that if you take non-apnea patients and you just manipulate their sleep, you are going to affect their weight loss by their sleep patterns, and you're going to affect weight gain by how much they sleep or not and their food intake. So I don't think it's a far step to say that if you have sleep apnea and you treat your sleep apnea and you're sleeping better, you should be in a sort of a little bit better poise to start working on the weight loss.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mark, very much for calling. And Dr. Baldo, back to you for a minute. You talked about the research where the opiate centers were blocked. And of course, right away, I'm thinking, well, is there a pill for this or something that would help us not be so inclined to eat all that food?
And that's a great question. And it turns out that people, these opiate blocking drugs are used in clinical practice. Drugs, perhaps the most widely used one is called naltrexone. In extreme circumstances, they're used in cases of opiate drug overdose to block the actions and prevent, you know, the dangerous consequences of overdose. But these drugs can also be used for other purposes as well. And over the years, people have looked to see, would it be possible that these could be useful in things like binge eating disorder, where they're this uncontrolled food intake, and often it's directed towards these highly palatable foods. And the answer is, there's some decent evidence that these drugs don't cure the disorder, but they can be helpful. A very recent study suggested with a newer drug of this class suggested that in binge eating individuals, giving them this type of blocking drug would help reduce their excessive intake when they're kind of in buffet situations, particularly of sweetened dairy products, so I guess ice cream type things. So there is emerging evidence that these drugs are helpful. And beyond eating disorders, there's also, and again, underscoring that there are these overlapping substrates upon which drugs act and highly palatable food. It appears that these drugs can also be helpful in curbing some types of drug cravings as well, particularly in alcohol abuse. So it may turn out that these will be, you know, very helpful and widely used drugs. Of course, we're always hoping to find better ones or perhaps add-ons that will make them even more effective. But but the evidence is promising that this is an important area of inquiry.
Very, very interesting. Mark, again, thank you for calling. Julia in Mondovi, your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for having the program. I have sleep apnea, and so I am tired all the time. I don't use the CPAP because it gives me claustrophobic, so I would like the doctor, I have another comment, but I'd like the doctor if they could address what would be better, the next best thing to treating that if you can't use the CPAP. And I don't binge eat, but I think I could very well, but I limit my food intake because of my lack of exercise due to my degenerative disc disease. And so I portion out my foods because I'm sure that, you know, it would be easy enough to overeat. So I do love ice cream, and I have it every day, but I limit myself to 2 scoops because I know it'd be easy for me to eat a huge bowl. I could very well do it, but I know my, you know, brain says just, you know, I think to myself, you know, you need to limit your size of food because you're not getting your exercise. But, you know, I, for losing weight, and, you know, it's nearly impossible. It just doesn't, you know, no matter how healthy I eat, the weight doesn't come off. And I do think it's linked to the sleep deprivation because I haven't treated it, and trying to look for something that would be appropriate to treat it besides the CPAP, since I've tried it and I can't use it.
Well, I think if you've got sleep apnea, depending on how severe it is, and again, I don't know your specific case, it really should be treated because it's not just that it's making you tired and potentially increasing your eating, but it's going to have you know, harmful effects on your cardiovascular system and increase risks for things like high blood pressure and heart attacks and strokes over the long haul. Now, there the really important thing, and I always tell this certainly tried to all my patients and to people in general, is that if you don't like CPAP, don't give up on treating your sleep apnea. Go either back to your sleep doctor or find another sleep doctor and find out what other options there are available. There are treatments like oral appliances that can sometimes help open up the airway a little bit and that can be helpful. Sometimes positional therapies can be helpful. But we've also had a lot of success at our center sometimes helping people to accommodate to CPAP who felt they couldn't possibly use it because of claustrophobia. So I would really not just sort of give up at the first try, but to go back and see if there are ways that you can find a treatment that you can tolerate.
Yeah. I just as an example of that, I had a mask on my face that covered my entire, so I was able to breathe through my mouth, but I needed to go to one that allowed me just to breathe through only my nose, and I didn't think I'd ever be able to do that, and I tried it and worked on it a little bit, and it, frankly, it works just fine. So I guess, Julia, what I'm saying is that if it doesn't work the first time, give it another shot, just as Dr. Ruth Benka is saying.
But maybe with a different mask. And
yeah, try something different.
Right, try something different.
Bill in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Bill. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you. I've got quite a bit different a situation, but it has to do with both loss of sleep and weight. But the weight situation is that I cannot gain weight. Due to an operation 7 years ago, I lost 25% of my weight, 40 pounds, and I can't gain it back. Is there some situation or some way to correct that?
Wow, what do you think, Dr. Baldo? So, was it an intestinal, one of those stomach?
Well, it was, as they may understand, this is a Whipple operation for pancreatic cancer.
Oh, okay. Oh. All right. Dr. Baldo?
Yeah, that's a challenging problem. Not being a physician, unfortunately, I don't have medical advice to give. You know, I do know in a general sense, we've been talking about the systems in the brain that turn feeding on or initiate feeding, but there are many other controls over stopping feeding, and it depends on the balance of those systems, whether or not feeding can be appropriately initiated. As far as medical treatments for that type of situation, I was wondering, Ruth, if you have any thoughts on that.
I think the thing is that when you're having trouble gaining weight due to a significant medical issue, it's really important to work with your doctor around making sure you get enough calories in. And again, that's where you're going to want to go after as much as possible those high calorie foods and, you know, maybe eating them frequently. Try not to get sleep deprived because one of the things, of course, is sleep deprivation does increase your calorie loss. And if you're not overeating eating to make up for it, you can lose weight if you don't sleep enough. In fact, most other animals who get sleep deprived will start losing weight, even though they're eating, because they can't quite eat to keep up with their increased metabolism. We, unfortunately, very easily make up for that calorie loss and way overshoot it. So, so sleeping adequately is important, and talking to your doctor about how to get enough calories in is also a good idea.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you for calling, Bill. David in South Milwaukee, hello.
Hi, good program today.
Thank you.
I'm calling in regard to a phenomenon known as food coma. And I get exceptionally tired after I eat a meal. In fact, I have to take a nap after every meal. And I get about 5 hours, sometimes less sleep a day. But on the weekends, when I make it up and get plenty of sleep, the same phenomenon occurs. I'm wondering if you might know what's going on there.
Well, a couple of things. That's a really good question. So when you eat a big meal, and particularly when it's a meal that might be high calorie, you will get very sleepy because your gut releases hormones and peptides that go to your brain and make you feel sleepy. And so when you're sleep deprived, you're already kind of on the edge of falling asleep, and that's enough to sort of push you into needing to take a nap. It also makes sense, again, and Brian maybe can comment on this evolutionarily, that if you've just ingested a big meal, it's not a bad idea to
rest. It's a great point, and actually it's one of the exciting areas in neuroscience research. There have been great strides in recent years in identifying specific neurochemical systems that couple eating and waking and arousal. And like Dr. Benka said, there are many levels of control throughout all, you know, the various parts of the brain that are involved at getting you to food, getting you to consume, and in the case of highly calorie-dense rewarding foods, perhaps overconsume. But then there comes a point where eating more wouldn't be beneficial. At the extreme end, you have stretch receptors in your gut that say, this is way too much, and that kind of just turns feeding off. But way before that happens, so in other words, after Thanksgiving, at least me, after Thanksgiving dinner, my stretch receptors probably kick in. But way before that, like Dr. Benka mentioned, these small protein-like molecules are released throughout, you know, your peripheral digestive system, your GI tract, your stomach, and these circulate through and act on the brain to turn off various aspects of behavior and cause us to start going into sleep.
And here we are at the end of the show. It flew by. I guess the message is get a good night's sleep. But if you're tired at the end of the day, think about what we talked about today, what our guests talked about today, as to why you want to go after that chocolate piece of cake before you go to sleep.
Right.
Dr. Ruth Benka, Dr. Brian Baldo from the University of Wisconsin, our guests today. I hope we have a chance to have them back and talk with them again. And thank you very much for listening. Tomorrow we'll talk with the authors of a brand new guide to birds, warblers in particular. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.